Hi, I'm Brian Buchalter, NCSM's Director of Professional Learning, and welcome to Learning with Leaders. We're all math people. Thank you for joining me and my co-host, NCSM President Katie Arrington, as we talk with bold leaders and influencers about their math journeys and contributions. Today, we will hear from our special guest about their inspiration, perceptions, and insights about instructional decisions that make mathematics welcoming and engaging to a broad audience. Listen and learn about how beliefs, practices, and policies must continue to advance to ensure that each and every person sees themselves as a capable and powerful mathematical thinker.
Hello, listeners. I'm Katie Arrington. Welcome to the NCSM podcast, Learning with Leaders. Continuing our series, We're All Math People, today's episode features two special guests dedicated to the cause of developing equity-minded educators for the socially just mathematics classroom. Let's take a moment and introduce Kenya Overton and Dr. Tutita Kasa. Kenya Overton is a current doctoral candidate at the NEAG School of Education at the University of Connecticut, or UConn. Having earned her BA and MS in mathematics from Westfield State College and the University of Mississippi, respectively, and 6 years in educational leadership from UConn, Kenya is passionate about ensuring that Black students have access to a high-quality mathematical education. Her research interests include organizational policies and practices in secondary schools that promote success for Black learners of mathematics, developing equity-minded mathematics educators, and empowering mathematics learners through hip-hop pedagogy. Dr. Tutita Kasa is an associate professor in the NEAG School of Education at UConn with expertise in elementary mathematics education. Her scholarship is focused on discourse, and she is a leading scholar in mathematical writing. She directed the NSF-funded Elementary Mathematical Writing Task Force to establish this aspect of discourse in the scholarly literature concretely. Dr. Kasa is dedicated to creating and testing the impact of approaches, advancing elementary students' abilities to write mathematically, particularly those to ensure those typically marginalized have more opportunities to voice their reasoning. She has extensively published for research and practitioner audiences, including in Educational Leadership, Gifted Child Quarterly, Journal for Research in Mathematics, Journal of Writing Research, Mathematics Teacher, Learning and Teaching Pre-K-12, School Science and Mathematics, Teaching Children Mathematics, and Young Children. Welcome to you both. We're so excited to have you.
Yeah. Pleasure.
Excited to be here.
Yes, thank you guys. We have been waiting for this one. And so, like Katie said, we're so excited to have you here with us and sharing with our listeners today. So thank you again. Before we get into our conversation, I know Katie just introduced you two, but if you will each briefly share your journey in education that has led to your current work.
Well, for me, I became a math major. I went to the University of Florida. I'm a Gator. Proud of it. And I just was so fortunate growing up that I had some fabulous math teachers. And it's just how I see the world. But then when I was done with that degree, I wasn't quite sure what I should do with it or could do with it. And I've always been intrigued about teaching and helping other people find that joy. So I went to Syracuse University, opposite end of the weather spectrum, and got my master's in elementary ed. I then taught for a few years, including not just at elementary school, but also fifth grade in a middle school setting. And I felt like there was just more to do. And then I realized, oh, wait, I can actually combine both of these loves. And that's where I got my doctorate in mathematics education, actually from UConn. And then at the beginning of my career, I was landed across this wonderful project in gifted ed, which I have no background in studying that area. that a colleague of mine had gotten funded for a federal program to develop elementary curriculum. And so through gifted ed pedagogy, they really look at students as future professionals. And so, you know, student mathematicians. And that really solidified my view that children can, we need to get out of the way. And what it's a question of how we can get them to think mathematically, not whether or not they can.
I love it, Tutita. Thank you so much. Kenya.
Yeah, so my journey, I've always had a love for math. And but I was also a dancer early on back many moons ago. So as I graduated from high school, I was going to a school, supposedly a university, that would allow me to major in both math, have a double major in math and dance. But then I had an injury, so I had to go all in with the math and wound up getting my associate's degree from Springfield Technical Community College. And then after that, went on to Westfield State University now, and Ole Miss, was there to get my master's after teaching in New York, upstate New York for a while. Moved, it was too cold, so moved to Memphis and went to Ole Miss to get my master's, and that was too hot, so I moved back up. Moved back up to Connecticut, and that's where I got my educational leadership and now working on my doctoral studies in math education. Now, what led me to my current work? Probably the fatigue of as a math educator for over two decades. Like, I got tired of seeing students that look like me being marginalized in math spaces. So my research is about making sure that Black students have a great experience when they're in math classrooms. And, you know, it's really fatigue. I got tired of teaching honors classes and AP classes and not seeing any Black students sitting in those desks, even though there was more than a 60% population of Black students in the school. I got tired of teaching remedial math courses at the college level and seeing the desks filled with Black and Brown students. But mostly I think it was really being tired of how math educators and actually just educators, period, perceive and talk about my babies, Black students. I think that I would hear constantly, they don't have the disposition or the perseverance, or even my favorite one, they don't have the grit to take a rigorous math course. So let me tell you, first of all, a Black person in America surviving has grit. You know, they with the likeliness of them being, you know, killed just for playing in the park or walking down the street or ringing the wrong doorbell. So they have grit. So these baseless mindsets and false perceptions of Black students being able to achieve in mathematics is something that I hope to change so that our students can have a quality math education that they deserve.
Each and every one deserves it. Absolutely. Oh my gosh. Sometimes we get into these podcast episodes and I just think, I've already heard so many things that are inspiring just from the introductions. I appreciate that. There's so much that you both said in there that I feel is so inspiring for math educators. Kenny, I think we need to all get tired of that, right? We need to be done with it. We need to be past that. And I know you have so much passion for that. I know you both do. And I know last year you had the opportunity to share some of this work around developing equity-minded educators for the Socially Just Math Classroom at the annual conference. Kenya, you've already shared quite a bit about why this matters to you. Tutita, do you want to comment on that? And then if you want to add anything, Kenya, we would love to hear, like, what drives you to this?
This is a perfect example of just always being inspired by what you learn from other people. And I don't have a big musical background, but I know there's a lot of math in music. So that's where my brain is going, and I want to learn more. And just how I look at other adults, I see every person as a math person. And I'm always really intrigued about how they're thinking. And I think that comes from, I'm actually an Army brat, emphasis on Army, but Connecticut is my 27th home. And so as a child, I was very shy, probably because, you know, there's sometimes that I moved, you know, every 6 months. And I don't know if it was the qualitative research in me first looking and observing and trying to find out and figure out my space. But when I, you know, as a very young child, for example, when I was in kindergarten, first grade, we lived on a military base in Brazil. And I was treated very differently in a really positive way because I was one of two American families. And so I've just been in different spaces where who I am literally by just stepping into the room, I've been treated in different ways. And that's certainly positive and sometimes very negative, being not just a female in mathematics, but also one of Puerto Rican descent. And so more recently, for me, this is going to sound a little bit odd, but if you were to ask me if I could name like what culture, where I'm really from, I always resonated with the military family. But I recognize, you know, since I'm no longer part of that community on a daily basis, I started to recognize much more how the experiences that I'm going through, it's being filtered by other people who don't think as highly of me and capable, much like Tanya was talking about. So being in at UConn and being a teacher educator, specifically in math, and predominantly teaching females from, you know, white females who have come from at least middle class, if not, you know, very privileged backgrounds, I was looking around our faculty, our students, including undergrad, you know, our master's and doctoral students, and it's not until recently where we have increased our diversity. And I recognize that when I come into a room, people might not see the fact that I'm Hispanic right away, whereas doctoral students or other folks like Kenya, she walks in and there's already baggage there. She's already being perceived less than, which I'm sorry, that just pisses me off. I'm not going to be part of that. And so the book that really resonated with me, and it was just like a permanent shift in my mindset, was Ibram Kendi's book, you know, How to Be an Anti-Racist, and just this idea that if I'm just standing by, that means I'm okay with, you know, these injustices, and I'm just simply not going to do that. So I was fortunate enough with folks like Kenya. You know, we were teaching the two required elementary math methods section. And so we co-planned a lot. And I took that opportunity. I'm finding different places just to become better. And I see that I just feel like just a product of this society. I need to, there are things that I don't see, and it's going to take the rest of my life to continue to unpack that. And so I just decided not to be scared of saying the wrong thing, and that I just need to actually take action. So this presentation was a true collaboration, many discussions that's just part of the work, and we were honored to have the opportunity to share it.
Woo, listen, I usually carry my maracas, all right, but I'm traveling right now, and I just want you to know I had to look around to find something to shake behind that. So I've got my keys. Oh my gosh. Listen, that last bop, everything you said, that last sentence though, I decided not to be scared of saying the wrong thing. That boldness to serve as an advocate is what our students need. It's what our teachers need to see the change. I love your story. That was awesome. You need to put that in the book or a movie or something one day.
Perfect. Well, thank you.
Yeah, that was awesome. In here that I just know, like Katie said, already I'm already inspired. I've got a sheet of notes going with just things that I want to hold on to from this time together. So I'm so glad that you guys had the opportunity to share last year at our annual conference in Washington, D.C., like Katie mentioned. If you will, share with our listeners some of the insight that you shared during your session last year regarding teachers seeing all of their students as mathematical thinkers and any resources that may support mathematics leaders looking to engage in this level of change.
And you want to start us off?
Sure. I think some of the things that we talked about in our session, one of the biggest things for me is definitions and our definitions. I feel like equity, the word, is sort of used and it's conflated to mean so many different, a myriad of things that it's not at its root, because equity actually comes from the Latin word meaning justice, right? And so when we're talking about having equitable practices, we're talking about making sure that those who haven't had a just education before now has one, right? Like, and we're using extra resources in order to get to that justice. And so I think that when you start intentionally defining things for people so that they have an understanding and they're not taking away the power of the words that they use so willy-nilly, I think that that's where we start. We have to start in being intentional with our definitions. What do we mean by equity? We mean that we are taking extra resources to help give equal footing. And so that's one of the insights that we share, because we need to make sure that people leave with a common understanding that equity does not mean access. Equity does not mean equal. Equity is actually taking the resources and extra resources and applying them so that marginalized communities, such as and Black and Brown people, can make sure that they are getting the education and math education that they deserve. And I think what happens so often is that people talk about equity, they don't talk about race. They talk about, oh, well, let's make it accessible for all, or let's make it, no, that's not enough. We need to understand that there has been a history of marginalization with Black and Brown communities. And so we need to do extra in order to make up for it, to help start making up for it. So that's one of the insights that we shared at our workshop. Another one is the fact that it matters that Black and Brown students do well now. Now that some teachers' evaluations are tied to how well students do, for better or worse, like we don't, I'm not saying it's good, but that's the reality. Well, some teachers, and I'm gonna say the thing that people don't say, some teachers didn't go into teaching to teach Black and Brown students. Some teachers went into it thinking that they were going to teach students that looked like them. And if the Black and Brown students in the classroom did not do well, that was okay because they were a small percentage. Well, that's not the case anymore. And so now that we're seeing that there is a decrease in the white school population for students, and it has decreased to where they're now the minority. Now you need to sort of care, even if you didn't before, even, you know, or you have to at least put on some type of pretending to care, you know, so that these students who look like me have a fair shot in your classroom. So that was one thing. Another thing that we shared. Tatita, you want to also?
Sure. We shared several quotes. One that stands out to me is from Todos in 2020, that all levels of teaching mathematics are imbued with the same racism and violence that permeates all schooling. And I like to revise that. It's just not in schooling. It's just, again, we have a history that there are inequities and injustices across our society, and school is just representative of that. And I would argue, I appreciate, Pena, what you said about the increasing number of Black and Brown students, but even if you're in a school that has an N of one, we all have an obligation to ensure that every child, and I purposely am using the word child and not students, they are children. Mm-hmm. We are there to take care of them. If we are getting in their way, we are not taking care of them. I have no right to assume what a child cannot do. I am there to uncover everything that they can do. And so I just love, just like the mathematical thinking that we all love, you're just trying to figure it out. It's just so much fun. How much fun is it to really hear and and learn and how other people are figuring it out? We kind of have the script flipped, and I like to call it school math. We focus on the answer instead of how you got there. And so I honor, my quest is to honor the children that I have the honor of working with, by listening and really learning how they're coming at different problems. And so I came at this work from a slightly different perspective than Kenya, because I do not believe that I have probably faced the level of macro and microaggressions that I'm sure she has, being a Black female compared to me being Puerto Rican, and I'm not sure that I present stereotypically as such. And so I want to ensure that each and every child has a voice in any kind of classroom that I'm in. And so when I'm working with predominantly white females who have had money privileges, I'm trying to help them better understand what it is that they can do to ensure that they're seeing every child as a mathematical thinker. So in doing that, I'm careful. For example, a few years ago, as part of our culminating exam with our master students, they develop a teaching portfolio, and we began to expect that they have some kind of statement on equity, social justice, and talk about the things they would do in their classroom. And pretty much all of my advisees, who I love, they're wonderful, but I felt took a very token approach to that. And they thought they could just check off a list if they said they were going to have diverse students on the covers of the books in their elementary school library. That's critically important. But if you're doing it to check it off and feel like your job is done, that's grossly insufficient. And that, in fact, can be harmful depending on the literature that you're putting out there. So I want them to, the exercise that Kenya, one of the exercises Kenya and I decided to bring into the session was asking the attendees, like we asked our pre-service teachers, of the things that they have seen, that the actions that people take, the marginalization, as well as uplifting students. And I have to say, I'll never forget that session. We brought both of our classes together, and it was silent, and all you could hear was this, you know, all the typing so quick. Like, they actually knew. I was pleasantly surprised to hear that they immediately had something to say, and they were finding really small things that they and other people can do to uplift students. So I was very hopeful for that. And the same thing happened during our session. And I know you did ask us for resources, but for me, there are so many wonderful resources out there. But if you don't have a mindset that you're willing to take action, what Kenya emphasizes all the time, you can read a gazillion books and it's really not going to make a difference. And I think it's an exercise like that to really bring it home, make it really personal, set up that safe space, but it's the expectation that you're going to take action. It must happen. It must happen.
Right. And I love that Tatita had talked about looking at students, right? And making sure that they are seen in what they're doing and that they have a voice. And so, and which also led me to hip hop pedagogy as well, because it is about making sure that we have, and another thing that sort of gets diluted, culturally relevant practices in the classroom. Like, that whole thing gets diluted, right? Because you missed the key component that Ladson Billings was saying, which was making sure that they had that self-empowerment piece. I mean, she uses a different term, but making sure that students know who they are and have and develop an identity and that social justice piece that she talks about. And so with hip hop, that comes from social justice, right? Like, hip hop is all about that. It's also about finding joy in circumstances that are just deplorable. We were able to create a whole culture that now a piece of it is on the Olympics, right? And so you have to tap into students' culture to help them learn, for the concepts to be more salient for them. And if you're just always coming from a Eurocentric mindset, then you're not seeing your students. You're not tapping into who they are and their innate brilliance in order for them to actually do well in these courses. So I think that, we do have resources that we use. We read a lot of people, Nicole Joseph, Dr. Berry, who was the former NCTM president, you know, that he constantly talks about how students are, Black students specifically, are marginalized in classrooms. But we were hoping in our session to plant seeds of being intentional with your work as a math educator, being intentional with making sure that students have a voice, that they can access the concepts that they need, that they can actually relate to them, and being intentional about calling out injustices that you see within your department, within the classroom. If you see like power dynamics going on, that you step in and you do something. So I think that the bigger message of our presentation is sort of planting that seed of, okay, well, we really got to be intentional with making sure that Black and Brown students have a chance in these classroom and math classrooms so that they can be entitled to the life that they want.
Hearing you say that, Kenya, and thinking about what you just shared with us about hip hop pedagogy, honestly, first thing came to mind, I heard the rapper Notorious B.I.G. say, it was all a dream, right?
You take it this far, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, one of my biggest mentors, Terrence Green, who is at UT Austin, studied at Wisconsin with Dr. Gloria Ladson Billings, and he had me in his class on the very first day. He literally jumped up and down and stomped his feet and said, "Access is not enough. Access is not enough," over and over and over. And I was like, listen, I'm going to follow you anywhere. It's so meaningful. We have to be so intentional. Like you said, Kenya, we have to be so intentional. And we have to, as you said to Tita, get out of their way. They can do it if we just let them, right? I love it. Well, so thank you for sharing some about last year's conference, but let's look forward to this year's conference. We're gearing up and super excited about NCSM's 56th annual conference coming up in Chicago on September 23rd through 25th. I know you're both going to be there as presenters and as participants. What are some of your favorite things about the NCSM conference? What are you excited about for this conference coming up?
Okay, this may not be politically correct, but I'm excited about getting Chicago pizza because I haven't had any true since the last time I was in Chicago, which was back in the early 2000s. So I've
been putting up the thing on the top of all of our lists.
But being in Chicago with math educators, I just like being in spaces where there's math educators from here, from around the nation, who you know that their best interest is making sure that students learn math at high levels, right? And so being able to have conversations and being in the rooms with them and just conversing about different theories and methodologies about how to do like it's just it's that's what I look forward to. And it's small enough for us to be really to be intimate, you know, and have be like, "Hey, Brian, I saw you," you know, and that's how Brian and I knew we were both from Ole Miss alums, right? Because we sat there and we were able to converse. And so I think that the fact that it's not a huge conference where you can sort of get lost and you can still have those meaningful conversations around how to best educate students in mathematics, I think that that's what makes it for me.
I completely agree. Like the energy, you just are in a room. You know, I remember when we were presenting and just the vibes you get, like the light bulb moments that, you know, they're just thirsting for knowledge, you know, and just so creative, especially with math coaches being a relatively new position and still being defined nationwide, that people really are thirsting for knowledge and it's people who really love the subject. So it's just so uplifting. I walk away with way too many ideas and after I attend the conference, that's for sure.
You know, I'm with you on that one, Dr. Costa, and I've got to figure out a way to kind of maybe departmentalize, you know, all of the inspiration that I leave with. So if anyone's listening, find me at this year's conference. I want to know what's your strategy. How do you digest everything? How do you take it in and take it back home and do the work that we're all called to do? So, well, with that said, we've reached the final question of our episode. It's my favorite / least favorite moment together because it means we're coming to an end, but I'm always so intrigued to hear from our guest on this question. So we have to ask, since our podcast theme for this series is we are all math people, what would you offer to the person who would say, you know, math just isn't my thing. I'm just not a math person.
And it's my pet peeve. You know, and I ask, so are you not a reading person either? I just always go back to the analogy. We just in our society, no one stands for people not reading. And it's just second nature. And I just take and I just replace math with any time we talk about reading. And, or even, for example, if they say make that offhand comment at a meeting, it's like, well, how did you get here on time? You know, you're using numbers all the time. And, you know, I see you as a math person. And especially if I'm working with future teachers, it's my job to convince them what they are. And we talk about redefine what that means.
Right. For me, I guess I kind of feel like if I can, you can type of mentality. Like if I'm able to do math, then you can. Because to me, math is thinking, right? It's logically thinking. And if you can think logically, you can do math. That's what we're doing here. We're building those critical thinking skills. So for me, everybody's a math person if you are a logical thinker. And if you're not, then you can become one. And there are strategies and ways in which you can. So I think that I was always one who, because my babies would say that all the time in the classroom, right? So, yes, I just can't do math. Yes, you can if I can, you know. And it's funny because you said that I have my sixth year in educational leadership, and I do as administrator, licensed one. And I always took roles that kept me in the classroom because I think it's important. Representation is important. And it's important that my babies see that they're a Black female who does math, who teaches AP calculus, who teaches at the university, you know. So because if I can, you can. And I think that part of it is that some students don't see themselves in their teachers. And so, you know, I'm seen as the auntie or, you know, Auntie Overton, Mama Kenya, whatever they decide to call me. But yeah, so I think that if you think, then you're a math person.
It's all of us. Every single one of us. Absolutely. You guys, ladies, thank you so much for being here and sharing your stories and your insights and such amazing, powerful ways to think about students and about what we could be doing for them. And what we should be doing for them. We appreciate you spending your time with us, and we just know the audience is really going to love hearing from you guys. So Brian said he had the last question, but I actually have the last question, which is just how can people find out more? Is there a website or is there a social media that they should follow to get more information from you guys?
Sure. I'm on... And I say that relatively hesitantly because when I think about it, I'll post some stuff.
I'm the same way. Don't feel bad.
I am on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, at knockout_4Real. Real.
Awesome.
And at LinkedIn, just my name, Kenya Overton.
Awesome.
I am catching up with the rest of the world with social media, so I don't have a lot to share there other than LinkedIn and my professional website. But a lot of the work that I've done with some awesome colleagues is featured on mathwriting.education.uconn.edu. And again, a lot of that in terms of the mathematical writing and really getting students to reason is to give individual students that voice that they have.
Awesome. All right. We'll make sure that those get posted in the show notes so that everybody knows how to get access to those. Thank you so much again. I feel, even though it's the end of the day, I feel inspired again and ready to go think about so much more. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope that you have been inspired by this bold mathematics leadership conversation and will tune into our podcast series each month. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. You can learn more about NCSM, leadership in mathematics education, and our upcoming professional learning events on the NCSM website, mathedleadership.org. You can also follow NCSM on Twitter at MathEdLeaders and using the hashtag NCSMBold. Until next time.